Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai. Daf Samech Heh. Today's daf has been dedicated by Mr. Jerry Harari and family in memory of his brother Yosef ben Simcha Sheniftar B'Kitzur Yamim V'Shanim. Ruach Hashem Tenuchenu B'Gan Eden. Amen. Today's daf is being studied Le'ilu Nishmat Moreno V'Rabbeinu Chacham Baruch Rafael ben Miriam and Le'ilu Nishmat Avraham ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tenuchenu B'Gan Eden. Amen. We are starting on Samech Heh. And we are two lines from the top of the daf. Ugmoch shebeozna. The Mishnah taught that a lady is allowed to go out on Shabbat with a moch, with let's say some cotton or a cloth that is plugged into her ears. Why did she have this in her ears? So that she said, because she has, let's say, moisture coming out or wax coming out of her ear, and therefore she wants to catch it. So she places this moch, this cloth, in our ear. So the Gemara says, Tani Rami Bari Haskel, Rami Bari Haskel learned in the Braita, Ve'u Shekashur Be'ozna. He said, only in the case where they actually tied it to the ear. Now, we don't know exactly how they tied it to the ear, but he's saying that it's not enough just to stick it in the ear itself. It must be actually placed in and tied in a certain way. The logic over here is, so it doesn't fall out, and the lady does not come to, or the person does not come to, carry it. They want it to be fastened tightly. It's interesting, Teshuvah from Rav Moshe Feinstein, in the Igrot Moshe, regarding this case. He says, we learned earlier in the Masechet, in the Perek, that anything that would serve as an interference in the mikveh, it's forbidden for the lady to go out on Shabbat, because we're concerned she might take it out for mikveh, and she might forget to put it back, and she might carry it. So he wants to prove from over here that having a piece of cotton, let's say, plugged up in the ear, obviously is not considered a hatzitza, because they're allowing her to go out on Shabbat. The only concern is that it doesn't fall off. But midin mikveh, it must be okay. And that's the way he rules. Of course, somebody should not rely on this as halakha l'maaseh. You have to ask a competent posek to each case exactly how deep the cotton is in the ear and what. But that's already what Moshe wants to say from this Gemara. In any event, ubmok shebesandela. It is permissible for a person to go out on Shabbat with a moch, which would be a cloth that's placed in the shoe. It would be like a pad, let's say, they place in the shoe. That she says, exactly, for ta'anug, in order to make it more comfortable. Ta'ani dami bari haskel, vehu shekashu la besandela. Again, it has to be tied to the sandal in order that it doesn't fall out, and therefore the person might come to carry it. Comes again when it says, u'moch shitkina la l'nidata. Also, the lady is allowed to go out with the cloth that she prepares while she has her nida. As we explained yesterday, the machloket Ashivet Tosfot, what the purpose of this moch is. Whereas she says it's asur letinuf, to save her clothes from becoming soiled. Tosfot said that's not enough to make it permissible to carry. He learned it has to be to actually save herself from tsa'ar. For example, the blood will flow on her body, dry up, and cause a tsa'ar. Sabar ami barhamah lememar. So Rami Bar Hama thought to say, "V'hu shekeshura la ben yarkoteha," that it's not enough to have the moch there, but it actually has to be tied around her thigh, which means it has to be fastened tightly. Amar Rava, Rava says no. Afa pishe'enu kashula. No, it does not have to be fastened tightly. Why? It says kevan dema'is lo atyal etuye. Since it's disgusting, she's not going to come to carry it, which means even if it falls off and falls out, she's not picking it up. It's a moch. Then for the other items, there was a gezerah, let's say by the pair that they put in the shoe. If it falls out of the shoe, why not? You'll pick it up and you might walk with it. But a moch, who's picking up a moch? The same thing with the ear, with the moch in the ear. We said, so long as it's fastened tightly, it's okay. Why if it's not? Because if it falls out, she'll pick it up. I guess it's not as disgusting as a moch. Comes again when it says, "Ba mine Rabbi Yirmiyah, Rabbi Abba, asta la bet yad mahu." Let's say you made a handle, let's say, to the moch, which means you don't have to actually touch the moch, you could touch it by a handle. So in that case, maybe you'll say, it's forbidden if you don't tie it. Why? because if it falls out, you'll pick it up because you could take it by the handle. You don't have to actually touch the mock itself. So that was his question. If it has a bet yad, what's the deen with going out with it on Shabbat if it's not tied? Amar le mutar. He told him it's mutar. Why? Because still, even though it has a bet yad, you're not picking up the mock. It's still disgusting. Yes. She says, Delo amrina lo ma'is, and afilu bebet yad ma'is. Even with the bet yad, with the handle on it, is considered ma'us. Itmar name. We have an Amoraic statement to support this. Amar of Nachman bar Oshaya, Amar of Yohanan, astala bet yad mutar. If they placed, they made a handle on it, it's still permissible, even though it is not tightly fastened. Comes again when it says, story. Rabbi Yohanan nafik behu lebe midresha. Rabbi Yohanan went out with what? That she says, bemoch shebeozno. He placed a cloth in his ear, shaya zaken, that she says, because he was old, vayta lo tsoat ha'ozen meruba. And he had a lot of earwax. So therefore, on Shabbat, he placed a moch in his ear, and he went out to the Bet Midrash. Went to the yeshiva. The halukin alav chavirav. And his friends argued on him. Why? Because his friends, his colleagues, held you can only go out with a moch if you tie it, like we just learned from the Braita. And therefore, they were against what the Yohanan did. And that went out with a moch in his ear, untied. And therefore, his friends argued on him. Rabbi Yanai nafik bihu lekarmelit. Rabbi Yanai went out with a cloth in his ear into not a public domain, but a karmelit, which is a rabbinical domain. V'halukin alav kol doro. And the whole generation argued on him. Which is not only the colleagues of Rabbi Yanai, but everybody argued on him. Now we'll see the difference between the two stories in a moment. So comes the Gemara and says, "Vehatani Rami Bar Yechezkel." Didn't we learn in a braita from Rami Bar Yechezkel, "Vehu shekashula beozna," that the only way you can go out with a moch in the ear is if it's tied to the ear? So what was Rabbi Yohanan doing? How did Rabbi Yohanan go out on Shabbat in the public domain with a moch in his ear? And why he didn't tie it? That's the question. You have a Bifirush Braita that says you have to tie it. So the Gemara says, not kasha, no question. Hadim haddek, hadilom haddek. Depends how tight it was. Which means, if you place the moch in your ear tightly, then Rabbi Yochanan held, in that case you don't have to tie it. Which is, if it's inserted tightly, there's no reason that we're going to suspect that what? It's going to fall out. When did Rami Bar Yechezkel say you have to tie it? That's if you placed it in loosely. So therefore, the Rabbi Yochanan held what? If it's mehaddik, which it was in his case, you don't got to tie it. Now obviously his colleagues argued on that as well. His colleagues said, no, even if it's tight, you still have to tie it. Halukin alav havirav. His friends argued on it. But the Rabbi Yochanan himself, it was mekel. He understood Rami Bar Yechezkel is only talking about where it's loose. Then you have to put a tie to it. Now, the Bianai was even a little more lenient. The Bianai put it in his ear loosely because he held in a karmelit, you don't even have to put it tightly. So that, because karmelit is only a rabbinical domain. Is that the whole generation argued on him. Because that, he had no support for that, which is even the lenient opinion of the Bianai, he held, all right, at least you got to put it in tightly. However, the Rabbi Yanai didn't even put it in tightly, and he put it in a, went in a karmelit, and he was totally lenient. Now let's read Rashi, because there's alternate interpretations to this Gemara. Let's read Rashi together. Hadim haddik. See Rashi, the Bura Matril. Hadim haddik. The Rabbi Yochanan ayatoche beozno yafe. Right? Rabbi Yochanan thrusted it in his ear nicely. Umadik. Velo ba'i kishira. And therefore he didn't need to tie it. V'derami Bar Yechezkel b'delo me'adek. And Rami Bar Yechezkel was talking about where it wasn't put tie. That's the Gemara's answer. V'shna acharina metamidei Rabbeinu HaLevi. Alternate interpretation from Rabbeinu HaLevi. Rabbi Yochanan kashur hava. Really Rabbi Yochanan tied it. Which means he put it in his ear and he had it tied. So what was the sheila over here? Ubet midrasho samuch lebeto. And really, his bet midrash was right next to his house. Because otherwise, you have to get the bet midrash in the story over, because otherwise, why is the Gemara to tell us that he was walking to this bet midrash? What do I get where he was walking? The point is, you want to tell me that he went outside in the public domain with a mok in his ear. So the Tamidei Rabbeinu HaLevi want to say no. From the fact that the Gemara told me that fact, that he went to the bet midrash, it must serve a purpose in the story. And what is the purpose? Because it was known that Rabbi Yochanan really lived next to the yeshiva. And as she says, Velo aita reshut harabim mafseket. And really he did not need to walk in the reshut harabim. So really it comes out according to this, Rabbi Yochanan is the mahmir over here. That even though he was in the reshut harabim, because he was just walking to the yeshiva, still, when he put the item in his ear, he tied it. And halukin alav haverav. And his friends argued on him, which means his friends in that case would say, you don't have to be so mahmir. If you're not going in the public domain, you don't have to tie it. Let's read the next lesson. Which is, if it's tied, afil reshut harabim mutar. Which means, once it's tied already, it's permissible to go out even into the reshut harabim. Ve'amai kama lebim midrasho. Ve'lo kama reshut harabim. See, the Gemara's question according to the Tamidim of Rashi is, or Tamidim of Rabbeinu Levi is what? Rabbi Rabbi Yehoshkel said, if it's tied, it's permissible. What do you mean tied is permissible? Even to go into the shoot, harabim. So the question is, why is Gemara making a point to say he only went to his Bet Midrash? What do you mean? If it was tied, he would be even allowed to go in the public domain. So the Gemara answers, Rashi Umeshani, Rabbi Yohanan, Kashur, Ve'lo, Me'adeke, Kekesher. Which means, we have to explain that Rabbi Yohanan, he had it tied, however it wasn't tight. So therefore, Rabbi Yohanan will make a difference. If you're going in the public domain, it has to be tied tightly. The knot has to be a tight knot. If you're going not into the shoot of the beam, it can even be a loose, but it has to be tied either way. So therefore, that was the question over here. So by the way, we have two different ways of learning this maaseh. Either according to the first way, which Rashi prefers, is that Rabbi Hanan didn't tie it at all. Rabbi Hanan just went out with the mok in his ear, and his colleagues argued on him. And the Gemara says, yeah, how did Rabbi Hanan do that? We have Rami Bar Yochai scale, you got to tie it. Says, oh, had the bad dick, had the little bad dick. She's Rabbi Hanan placed it in tightly, and he said, when you place it in tightly, you don't even have to tie it. And that which Rabbi Yehoshkel was talking about was, you have to tie it only if it is loose. And that's what the rabbis understood also. And therefore they were against Rabbi Yohanan. Second version, no. Really, Rabbi Yohanan tied it. But what? He didn't go into the Shuta Rabin. So he was Mahmir. So to that, the Gemara says, what are you talking? Everybody has scale, once you're tying it, allows you to even go in the Reshut HaRabim. Why is the Gemara specifically limiting it to the Bet Midrash? So that the Gemara says, no, Rabbi Yohanan understood that he tied it, but not tightly. So when you don't tie it tightly, so then you only have to go, let's say, you know, the non-Reshut HaRabim. But if you tie it tightly, then everybody has scale, let's even go in the Reshut HaRabim. Now, Halukim Alav Haverav, the when they're still in his colleagues, so Rabbi Yohanan tying it, they have no difference, tightly and not tightly. Once you're tying it, it's permissible. So which means they were more lenient according to that version than Rabbi Yohanan. They saw Rabbi Yohanan tying it. So they said, what is he only being lenient over here to go to the Bet Midrash? Technically, he could even go to the Reshut HaRabim. So therefore, there's a different way of understanding. Right. His colleagues understood that Rabbi Yohanan was being careful only to go in a, you know, Karmelit or something like that, where not in the public domain. So the students argued on some, well, if you're tying it, even if it's not tied, the bottom line, you're tying it, you can even go in the public domain. And Rav Yanai, he put it on his ear, he didn't tie it, it was loose, and he went in a Karmelit. So no, nobody holds like that. That's Halukin Allah Kol Bene Doro. We have no shita like that. You can put it in loose and go into the karmelit, which is the lenient opinion. You could say at least you have to put it in tightly or make a loose knot. But to go loosely in your ear in the karmelit, that's where the halukin alav kol bene doro. So those are different ways of learning the sugya of Rabbi Yohanan. Comes the Gemara, continues. Bepinpel ubegilgal mela. We said it's permissible for a lady on Shabbat, for that matter, anybody, to go out on Shabbat with a pinpel of peppercorn in a person's mouth. Ubegilgal mela. Galgal mela would be, let's say, a crystal of salt.
But again, this is before Shabbat.
This is as long as she put it in her mouth before Shabbat. So it comes again, what says, pilpil, what's the purpose of the peppercorn? Because somebody has bad breath. Galgal melah, and what's the salt for? Lidorshini, that she says, the chole hashinayim, for a tooth ailment. So these items over here are really medicinal. The halakha says, so long as it's medicinal, even though it's not, let's say, a takshit, nor it's a malbush, but since she needs it, that's considered already sodikva, and therefore would not be considered carrying, even though it is in her mouth. Or for that matter, any item that she places in her mouth for medicinal reasons. So Gemara gives examples. Zangabila, that's coming to include zangabila, that she says, jinziru, that's ginger, that the lady puts in her mouth. Iname darsona. Darsona, that she says, kinnamon, which means cinnamon. Again, all these items are placed for medicinal reasons. So long as it's placed before Shabbat, it is okay. Comes the Gemara and says, Shen totebet. Shen shel zahav. The way we understood, according to Rashi's first understanding in the Mishnah, it's one case. You have a removable tooth, that's Shen totebet, that's made out of gold. So we have a mahloket tanaim. Rabbi Matir. Rabbi allows her to go out on Shabbat with this. Vachamim oslim. And Vachamim say, Asur. So comes the Gemara and says, Amar bizera. Lo shanu ela shel zahav. The only case we have a mahloket is on a gold tooth. Abal b'shel kesef, evra kol mutav. On a silver tooth, everybody's going to say mutav. Tanya nemeche, b'shel kesef, evra kol mutav. Shel zahav, Rabbi Matir v'chamim osrim. Now we have to analyze the sevara over here. What's the reason why it should be forbidden to go out, according to Hakamim, with a gold tooth, whereas on a silver tooth, they are mekel? What's the sevara of the Hakamim over here? Why should they be osir a gold tooth? So we have to see that she. Two explanations here as well. That she. Lo shanu, the Hakamim osrim, ela shel zahav, shemishune b'mar'e mishar shinayim. Because it looks different. A gold tooth obviously stands out. V'dilma machachula. They're worried that they might laugh at her. V'shaklala b'yadao memtiya. So the concern is over here, they might laugh. Look at that funny tooth. She might get embarrassed. She might remove the tooth from her mouth and she might come to carry. That's the first explanation of Rashi. Aval shel kesef, continued Rashi, shedome l'shar ha-shinayim. I mean, silver looks more like the other tooth. Okay? Looks more white like a regular tooth, teeth. Devrei hakol mutar. Then everybody will say it's mutar, because they're really not going to laugh at her, and she's not going to come to carry. Rashi says, l'shar nabotai. That's the way that she's rabbis understood the case. V'linir eh? Is what I understand differently. Ta'ama d'shel zahav, mishum d'hashiva, ve'atel la'achvuye lekach. Asur, aval shel kesef, lo hashiva, ve'lo atel atuye. And she says, no, it's the same old jewelry gezera. A gold tooth is something that's hashuv. And then what the concern is, the lady might take out a tooth in order to show it to a friend, and therefore the gezera is she might come to carry it for amot, whereas silver is not that hashuv, and therefore we're not concerned that she might take it out. So it comes that we have a machloket between the Rashi and his rabbis how to understand shitat hachamim, why they are oser shen shel zahav. Now comes the Gemara and says, we're on the
that a man could do that.
Same thing. We don't make a gizah. It's a machloket. It's machloket ishonim. If we say that men have the same gizah of showing their jewelry, according to the first reason of that, she for sure doesn't make a difference between man and lady. Right. Because bottom line, if they're going to get embarrassed, well, the man gets embarrassed as well. Amar Abaye said, Rabbi, the Rabbi Eliezer, the Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, all these tanaim, kolehu spiralehu. They all hold that what? Dechol midi demigniyabe. Anything that a person will become embarrassed from, lo atya le'achluye, they're not going to show it. Which means, if it's something that's shameful, even though it might be precious, you're not going to show it to other people because you're going to expose your weakness. You're going to expose your shame. So the Gemara says, Rabbi had Amram. Rabbi, we just said his opinion. Why does Rabbi allow you to go out with a gold tooth? Why doesn't he suspect that she might come and show it to her friends? Because having a gold tooth is something that's embarrassing. What, she wants to show her friends that she's missing a tooth? So therefore, we see that Rabbi holds that anything that's shameful, the gezerah of maybe she'll take it off to show it, does not apply. Is that clear? Mm-hmm. Why is Rabbi matir? Why doesn't he say you might come show it to somebody? Ah, it's gold. Yeah, but it's not a gold ring. It's not a gold necklace. It's a gold tooth. That means she has to take it out. People will say, why, you're missing a tooth? That already is shameful. So we see that B subscribes to that opinion. How about the other rabbis? Rabbi Eliezer. We learned already as well. In the earlier daf. Netanya. Rabbi, exactly. Rabbi Eliezer. Poter bechobelet. Ups, lohichet pleiton. Rabbi Eliezer allows the lady to go out with this pouch filled with balsam or spices. We were talking about a lady that had bad odor. Right? So she needs this item to cover up her odor. Now even though, let's say it's an adornment, we said it's permissible. When it says papatur over here, we learned above that really means mutar. The bin el was matir. Well, what's the logic? Maybe she'll show it off. No, by showing it off, what is she saying? She's telling everybody she has body odor. And therefore it's shameful. So therefore again you see that any place where there's a concern that it's derogatory or embarrassing, we don't suspect that she's going to take it off. Now we have one more rabbi to prove. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, how do you know that? Netanya, we have a braita. Klal amar Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Kol shu lemata min asabacha yotzabo. Lemala min asabacha ena yotzabo. We have the rule. Anything that's above her hat, she's not allowed to go out with it on Shabbat. What's the concern? Because since it's above her hat, so therefore she'll she'll take it off. What's the problem? Nothing's going to be revealed. But anything under our hat is asur to go out. It's pumutat to go out on Shabbat. What's the logic? Because she's not going to take it off. Why is she not going to take it off? So here's a big hadush here. Because even though she has a hat on, but you have this, let's say, kippah tzemet underneath her hat. But by taking it off, she's going to reveal a little of her hair. Why? Because she really does have a hat on. So lechaora, what should be the problem? What's the limit? If it's underneath what should be the problem? She's not even going to take that off. You know why? Because by pulling it out from underneath the hat, some of her hair is going to be revealed. So what do you see from this opinion of Rabbi Shimon el-Azhar? That even if the embarrassment is minimal, which is the other cases, showing a tooth, that's obvious. Or showing the body odor item, that's obvious. Here the Hiddush is, even though it's not such an embarrassment technique, it's not like she's taking off her hairpiece where all her hair is being revealed. All she's doing is, alright, that's for sure, but she's, all it over here is, it's under the sabacha, she's just pulling it underneath and all it's going to be revealed, maybe a little of the hair. Still, that level of embarrassment is enough to discourage us from taking it off, and therefore it is mutar. So you see, the most extreme opinion is Rabbi Shimon el-Azhar, where the embarrassment does not have to be great. Even if it's minimal embarrassment like that, it is permissible. Now, there is a question here that she has on his rabbi's interpretation of this sugya. Let's read it inside together. In the Dibura Matkil about Shel Kesef, that she says, "Velelashon Rabotai Kashani." According to my rabbi's interpretation, I have a kasha. Again, how did the rabbis interpret the sugya? The rabbis interpreted the sugya that they might laugh at her, right, with the golden tooth, and therefore she might take it out and come to carry it. He says, "Ha Damar Abaye, Rabbi Rabbi Shimon Ben Elazar." Right? Rabbi Yeh just said all these rabbis hold, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Rabbi Eliezer, they all hold what? That in a case where it's a gnai, she's not going to
take it out.
Take it out. So he says, "V'itamad Rabbanan mishum dehaychi ada." If you're telling me that the whole reason why the rabbis are osir is because she's embarrassed that what they might laugh at her, and that's the reason why we say it's asur, right? That's the reason why the Rabbanan say it's asur, because they might laugh at her. So he says, "My shenan." I'm reading that Gota Bach. The kashari la mishum. Okay, my shenan Rabbi. The kashari la mishum de lo atya lahvuye, which means, and the Rabbi is saying, why is it mutar? Because we don't suspect her to show it, because it's embarrassing. According to the rabbis of Rashi, the rabbis could agree to that. The rabbis are only saying that she can't go out with it because they're worried that she might be laughed at. But could be that they do agree in principle to the concept that an item that's genai, she's not going to show it. So why couldn't the Rabbanan be part of the list? What Abayah says, there's a list of rabbis that all hold, if it's an embarrassing thing, they're not going to take it out. They're not going to show it. The rabbis can agree to that. The rabbis can agree. But why they all sit in this case? For a different reason. They all sit only because she might get laughed at and she might take it off out of embarrassment. So therefore, why didn't Abaye include Hachamim to the list? According to that, she's way of learning, it's not a question. Because when she learns, that's the whole machloket. Rabbanan will say the reason why it says, because she will show it off. So therefore you see clearly that they don't work with the Sivara, that's something that's derogatory, they're not going to show it off. Adrabah, according to the Rashi, what's the reason why Hakimim Osir have to go out with this gold tooth? Because she will take it off and show it. Oh, so we understand why Abaye didn't put Rabbi on the list. I mean, Rabbanan on the list. Because they clearly hold even derogatory things, you show. But according to Rabbotav, that give a different reason. Rabbotav say the reason why she's not going to go, she's not allowed to go out with it, because she might get laughed at. Oh, she might get laughed at. Implying that that's the only reason. Implying that what? That if it wasn't for that reason, the rabbis would agree mutar. Why? Because she's not going to take it off herself. Why? Because it's the rabbi. Because I can't even put Rabbanan on the list with all the other rabbis. So Rashi comes along and basically answers the way the Aharonim understand him, is that you're right. In a chenameh, could be according to Rabbanan, they will hold of this reason. But he was only listing the rabbis where you see that they explicitly use the sevara lemaaseh. You see it in action. Which means, Rabbi, that's what's working over here. The reason why he's matir is because that's the way you will not show it off. Here the rabbis were osir. The rabbi said, Baal Mayim Tassur. So we don't see a specific lema'aseh case where the rabbis are using that sivara. Could be they agree with it. Abaye is saying we found three rabbis explicitly halakha lema'aseh use this logic that are the derogatory thing that's going to show it off. Which means the rabbis agree to this principle as well. But we didn't see it in a case, lema'aseh. You're right. They could hold of it. But Abaye was only giving case like Rabbi Eliezer's case, where he allows a lady to go out with a platon shel besamim. Why? Because she's not going to take it off. You see, in our Mishnah, Rabbi was matir to go out with shen shel zav. You see the case of the Rabbi Shlomo ben Lechazar. He allows the lady to go out with the hair covering underneath that. There are clear halakha cases that the rabbis were using the sevara, whereas the rabbis in our Mishnah were osir the lady to go out with a gold tooth. So therefore, you're right, for the reason of what, that she might get laughed at. But they really do agree in principle that they're not going to take it off, but you didn't see it manifest in a case, so that's why they did not bring it. Comes the new Mishnah. Yotza besela she'al hatzinit. The lady is allowed to go out on Shabbat with a rock to fasten the tzinit. The Gemara is going to explain that the tzinit was a type of cloak that the lady would wear, and it had, let's say, a loop at the end of one side of it, and she needs to fasten it. So they would put a rock, let's say, on one side of the cloak, and the loop, the hook, would clasp over the rock, and that would keep her cloak fastened. So the Gemara is telling you she can go out on Shabbat with the rock that's attached to her cloak. She has a rock. No, a selah is a... No, the Gemara again. So it's out the selah. You'll see the way the Gemara is going to explain. Selah is a. I go back. Restart the Mishnah. That's the next case I'm giving you. the tzinit, the Gemara is going to explain, is an ailment that she has on her foot. And therefore, she needs to place a coin on the bottom of her foot in order to heal it. Why a coin? We'll see. I go back. Yotzah b'sela shala sinit. We have Rashi over here. Rashi. Sela. 100% correct, Sam. Matbayahu. As she says, it's a coin. Sinit b'feres b'gemara. That will see what's for the gemara for that. Habanot ketanot. The small little girls. Yotzot b'hautin. They can go out with strings in their ears. What are we talking about? Pierced ears. So they want to keep the hole from closing. So what did they put in their ears? They used to put strings in their ears. They can go out with them on Shabbat. It's not considered carrying. It's considered a tzorich. Not only strings, but they could actually put kismin, would be little pieces of wood, in order to put it in their ear, in order to keep the hole from closing. Now again, we have a mahluk at how to learn this last case, what I just told you. I explained it to you as going in the ear. But let's look at Rashi. Habanot ketanot shemenakebot oznehem. Yeah, they pierce the ears. Ve'en osim nizamim ad sheyigdelu. Right, they didn't give them earrings until they grew up. Ve'notnim chutim o kesamim beoznehem. So they put either strings or these pieces of wood in their ears. Shelo yistemu oznehem. Right, in order that the ears do not close up. Levaya. I told you already, Arav Hida understands what Levaya means. That's the that she's rabbis. She's Lerabbi Umori Yitzhak Levi. That was that she's rabbis. Va'afilu means even kesamim, right? Even if you put wood. So it says Rebutaka Amar. It's a hadush. What's the hadush? Da'afalgav de'lav tachshit noyu. Even though, let's say, the strings you can justify wearing on Shabbat, because it was an annoy. It might be like a tachshit item. It's like a very nice item to consider, let's say, a tachshit. However, urhabaki velomas, which is the hadush, is even the wood that's really not decorative, still is permissible because it's necessary, and if it's not considered a masui. So not only hotin, but even kismin, even the wood is not considered a masui. So comes the Rashi and says, "Beyesh mefarshim hotin shekolad b'hem sahara." Says we're talking about over here not hotin in the ears, we're talking about hotin that they place in their hair. The aslina legedola, right? We said the gedolim cannot, an old lady, an older girl cannot wear it. Why? Because it's a hatzitza for the mikveh. So that she wants to say the hadush of this mishnah is that the young girls that don't go to the mikveh, it would be permissible for them to put these strings in their hair. Because they don't have the hatzitza issue. Why? Because they don't go to the mikveh. So that she has two questions on this understanding. Number one, the young girls in the olden days did go to the mikveh. Which means when they became nida, they went to the mikveh right away, even before they were married. So therefore, what are you talking about? The same gizra should be by the young girls. Secondly, then what's the Mishnah saying? Va'afilu b'kismin. Even kismin. Everybody agrees you didn't put kismin in your hair. You don't put pieces of wood in your hair. If you say it's going on the ears, we understand. Not only could you keep the ears open with hutin, but you could also keep them open with kismin. But according to the understanding that they want to say, it's talking about putting in the hair, as ties in the hair. What's the wood talking about? So therefore, she rejects that shita, and he understands the ma'aseh is talking about putting it in the ears. Comes the Mishnah and continues. Arabiyot yotzot re'ulot. The ladies from Arabia, meaning the Jewish ladies, that live in the Arab lands, they're able to go out re'ulot. Re'ulot is wearing their clothes, their garment, their kerchief, let's say, like the Arab ladies would wear it, where they cover their head and their entire face, and all they have showing is their eyes. So that would be considered a normal way of wearing the garment, and it's not considered a burden. And therefore, since that's a normal way of wearing the garment, anybody is really allowed to go out. The Mishnah just chose Arabiyot because they were accustomed to go out like that. Umadiyot, which means the ladies, the Jewish ladies that come from Madai, they could go out pirufot. That's what I interpret in the beginning of the Mishnah. Pirufot means they wear their cloak in a certain way that has a clasp at the end of it, like a hook, and they have a rock, let's say, on the side of their garment, and they clasp the hook around this rock in order to keep the cloak from falling. That's like a button, we would call it, but they would have a rock, let's say, and they would tie it like that. That's called pirufot. V'chol adam. By the way, the Mishnah says this is referring to not only Arabian women or ladies from Madai. Ela shedibru hachamim behoveh. They only just talked in the present, which is these are the normal people that wear such things. Porefet ala eben ve'ala egoz ve'ala matbeya. The Mishnah clearly says it is permissible to do this procedure called porefet, meaning tie her cloak either to a rock that's fastened to the garment, or egoz, or a nut that's fastened, ve'ala matbeya, or for that matter, a coin that's connected. So long as she doesn't do this on Shabbat, which means she cannot place the coin there on Shabbat or the rock there on Shabbat, it has to be done from before Shabbat. The Gemara will explain exactly what that last part of the Mishnah means. Let's wait for the Gemara. Let's just read the end of Rashi's over here. Rashi, let's read Porefet. Shemitatfot betalit, right? They wear a certain type of talit, like a cloak. Vetolea ritzua b'sfateha, right? She has a string attached to the corner of it. Ha'achat keneged savara by her neck. U'b'sfata sheni korechet eben. On the other side, she places, let's say, a rock or egoz. Ve'kosheret ritzua b'chrach v'enet nofeh b'aleha. Exactly, she ties that ritzua around the rock in order that it doesn't fall. Let's see next. She porefet. Kemo kerasim, that's like hooks, right? Porefet is actually hooks. That's the gives you a targum that the metargina and porfin kol mechaber lebeket lechaveru. When you attach one part of the beket to itself, kari perifa ubelvad shenot tefrof lechetav shabbat. The Gemara parich lamad esha porefet. Okay, we'll see that in the Gemara. Comes the Gemara and says, my tzinit. We said on Shabbat it's permissible for a lady to go out with a coin. She'alat tzinit. What is tzinit? So the Gemara says, bat ar'a. What is bat ar'a? Lashi. Maka shehi ta'at parsat ha-regel. She has, let's say, a wound on the sole of her foot. Ve'kosher ba sel al-refu'ah. Hiddush. They would tie a coin flush against the makkah in order to be healing. It was a healing process. So the Gemara says, "Umay shena sela." Why do you have to put a coin? Ilema kol midid akusha maalela. If you're going to tell me, yeah, because it's hard, and therefore you have to put something hard on the wound, le'abad le'haspa. So why don't you put, let's say, a piece of pottery, a piece of hard, pottery, exactly. So the Gemara says, "Ela mishum shukta." No, we're concerned because the coin gives out some moisture. So therefore, maybe that's the issue that heals it. The moisture of the coin heals it. So the Gemara says, La'abad la tasa. So what do you have to be a coin? Just give a regular, any metal plate gives off moisture. Why does it have to be a coin? So the Gemara says, no, Ela mishum tsudata. Must be because of the picture on the coin. It seems that there's some type of healing in putting a coin that has, let's say, an emblem on it, or, you know, a picture that comes out of it, and you stick it on the makkah itself. So if that's the case, la'avad la'pulsa. So you could use a pulsa. Pulsa was a wooden coin, which means so it's made out of wood, it has a image on it, and stick it on the foot. So the Gemara says, what's the reason over here, a coin? So the Gemara says, amar abayesh ma'mina kullihu ma'alina. Must be all three things are part of the healing process. Number one, it's hard. That's what the coin has. Number two, it gives up moisture. The coin has that. Number three, it has a picture on it. So therefore, all three are only found by a metal coin. And therefore, we must say that since all three are beneficial, that's why she can place the coin. Ne'ed of Shabbat, obviously. She ties it to her foot in order to go out with it on Shabbat. Comes going on, continues. Habanot yotzot mehutin. Ladies on Shabbat, or the girls on Shabbat, are able to go out with these chutin that are in their ears.
So comes 12 years old.
Banot is the young girls. Young girls, doesn't matter. Young girls. Habanot yotzot mehutin. Abu de Shmuel. Abu de Shmuel is the father of Shmuel. lo shavik dehu lebinte denafke behutin. He did not allow his daughters to go out on Shabbat with hutin in their ears. We will see why. Velo shavik lehu gannian gabe hadade. Nor did he allow his daughters to sleep together in the same bed. Ve'avid lehu mikvaot beyomei nisan. And furthermore, he made for them mikvaot, so they could dip in the month of Nisan. We'll see what that means. Umafseh beyomei tishrei. And he also made for them mats when they were dipping in the months of Tishri. We will see exactly what each one of these things means. The Gemara will explain each one. Mm-hmm. Let's go one at a time. Lo shavik lehu yotzi yotzot bechutin. He did not allow his daughters to go out with these strings in their ears. Ve'ha'anantenam. But what do you mean? We learned just now in our Mishnah, habanot yotzot bechutin. The ladies are allowed to go out with the chutin. So the Gemara says, binte dabu d'shmuel d'tzivu'in avu. Yeah, they had very fancy strings in their ears. They were colored. And therefore, lo shavik lehu. He did not allow them. Why? Because they would take them out to show it. Our Mishnah is talking about plain ones. So a plain string in the ear, while it's not a burden, you're also not concerned that somebody's going to take it out of the ear and show it. What are you showing off? A regular string? It's not tied. It's just going right through the hole, hanging through the hole. So the Mishnah allows it. If I take it off to show it, why are you taking it off to show it? Plain strings. But Abu de Shmuel's daughter, they had fancy ones. And then what was the concern? They might pull it out in order to show it and walk for Amot, Bishut Rabim. We learned earlier, but that Tosfot explained, earrings, there was no gizra that you might take it off into the Shuta Rabim. Why? Because we said that in the way the ladies used to have the earrings, the whole ear used to be covered with all sorts of head dressings and tassels and things like that. So it would be a big to-do to take off an earring. So that's why an earring of a gedolah. Here we're talking about banot ketanot. They didn't wear the headdresses. And therefore the ears are really exposed. Therefore it could be very easy for them just to pull out the chut. Therefore Abu de Shmuel forbade them from wearing these so now of course if they had simpler ones he would allow them, but that they didn't have them. They only had the hashuv ones, the fancy ones, you know, the ones that were colored. So therefore it was an issue of carrying. Next din. Lo shavik lehu ganian gabe hadade. He did not allow them to sleep in the same bed. Why? Lema misayale. Let this be a proof that avuna da amar avuna nashi mamsolelot zubezu pisulot kehuna, which means the ladies that are involved in a misolelot, which means they rub each other, which means in otomakom, in the private parts. So these ladies over here, the Gemara wants to say, "Kotei avuna are pasul to marry a kohen gadol." Because a Kohen Gadol is only allowed to marry a Betula. Now, technically she's still a Betula, she wasn't with a man. But since they did this to each other, so the rabbis came along and forbade such ladies, they called them Nashim Misolelot, from Keuna. So Abu Dishmuel did not allow his daughters to sleep in the same bed, so they don't come to this practice that would make them pasul Keuna. Now, Kohen Gadol. Tosfot and Nashim right away say, what are you talking? Shmuel's father did not live in the times of the Kohen Gadolim. So what is he worried about? His daughter's not going to be allowed to marry a Kohen Gadol? There's no Kohen Gadols at his time. So the explanation is, he didn't want them to be involved in a practice that potentially could posel them from Kohen Gadolim, which means obviously it's not a nice thing, obviously. Obviously it's not the Derech Eretz. So therefore, he didn't want to put them in the same bed together, lest they come to this this Nashim Misolelot. So the Gemara says, no, you have no proof to this. Which means we want to say, it must be Abu Dishmuel holds like Ravuna that says that these ladies that are involved in such a practice are pasul to Keuna, that's why he didn't do it. So no, that's not the reason why he did it. Savar ki hechi delo lilfan, so they don't become accustomed gufa nukhra'a, to be with somebody else in bed. Which means if they're sleeping together, they'll get accustomed to have somebody in bed with them. And therefore that'll lead them to maybe go with a man, Chas v'Shalom. And therefore, if you want to, you put them in separate beds, so they won't feel, you know, when they get older, that they have to be in bed with somebody else, with a gufanuchna as a foreign person. She says, v'yit'avu l'shkavim ish. And then they'll have a ta'avat to sleep with a man. So that explains that practice. Now we still have two more practices of Abu Nishmuel. So he was ba'avid lehum mikveh beyomei Nisan. He made for his daughters a mikveh in the month of Nisan. What are we talking about over here? So the Gemara explains over here, they were living in Bavel. And where would they go into the mikveh usually? Into the Euphrates River. Nehar Perat. So if you have the Euphrates River, what does he have to go make for them a mikveh? You have the best mikveh, which means, you know, natural bodies of water are the best mikveh. So therefore, what does he have to go construct for them a mikveh? And why specifically in the months of Nisan? Which means, why during that season? So the Gemara says like this, Mesaya le lerav. This is going as a proof to the opinion of Rav, the Amar Rav, Mitra b'ma'arava. One of the telltale signs that it rained in the west, meaning in Israel, Sahada Rabba, the biggest witness to that is Perat, is the Euphrates. Rav held that the Euphrates River is, its level, its water level, is directly affected by the rains of Eretz Israel. It seems the rains of Israel eventually trickle down into the Euphrates. So they used to say, when the people in Bavel would see the Euphrates River rising, they would say, "Ah, oh, Baruch Hashem, must be it was a rainy season in Israel." Because that was the indicator for the rain. Okay, so now we know one fact, that Euphrates River is affected and it has rainwater of Israel in it. So what? So the Gemara goes one step further. Savar shelo yirbu anotfim ala zohli. He was concerned that there shouldn't be more rainwater in the Euphrates than flowing water. What are we talking? Notfin is the rainwater, the dripping rainwater, and Zohalin is the flowing water. So Rashi gives us over here very important introductions in the laws of mikveh. There's two types of mikveh. Torah says there's a mikveh, and there's a ma'yan or bor. What's the difference between a ma'yan or a bor? A bor is very simple, collected water. Which means, let's say it rained into a pit, the water is sitting over there, that's considered pure water, rain water, 40 seahs, as long as you have the measurement, it's kasher. However, there's a rule, he says. When you're using rain water, it has to be still. The way the halakha calls that, ashborin. Ashborin has to be still water. It cannot be flowing, cannot be moving. However, when you use a mayan, for example, a spring, so even if it's flowing and moving and running, it's okay. Right? Now it would be, let's say, a river that's flowing. It's a mayan, it's natural spring, let's say, so it would be permissible. Rainwater that's collected has to be collected in a certain spot. It cannot be flowing. The problem over here was with the Euphrates River. The Euphrates River is a mayan. It flows. It's no problem. But the problem is, at the end of the winter, which is in the month of Nisan, where all the snow, let's say, is now melting off the mountains of Israel, and all the water now is flowing down into the Euphrates, so there was an excessive amount of water. So now you have rainwater with flowing water. Now, if you have more rainwater in the Euphrates than its own water, so now the Euphrates is constantly moving. So therefore it's Zohalin. And the only time rainwater works is when it's Bajmorin. So therefore he was concerned in the months of Nisan, where there's excessive rainwater in the Euphrates, that his daughters don't dip there. Because what's going to happen? They're dipping in rainwater that's moving. And the other times of the year, where the rain level, from after Nisan, after the rain season in Israel, because it doesn't rain after Nisan in Israel. So he waited sometime after Nisan until the water level settled. He knew for sure that there was more Euphrates water than rain. Well, there was no problem. But in the months of Nisan, where the end of the season, where the water is a lot, he was concerned. So he made for them special mikvot. What did he do, probably? He probably made an inlet from the Euphrates into a bor, which was collected. Now it's you know, Ashmorin, the water stopped, and therefore they were able to go in such a mikveh. But that's only because he held that the Euphrates is affected from the rainwater of Eretz Yisrael. So comes the Gemara and says, Ufliga de Shmuel. Rav, that says the Euphrates gets its water from Israel, argues on Shmuel. The Amar Shmuel, Nahara, the river Euphrates, Mekipe Mivrach. It's blessed from itself. Literally, Mekipe, from its, let's say, from its bottom, from its bedrock, which means it's just a natural spring. The waters of the Euphrates is just producing from itself. So therefore, according to Shmuel, you can dip in the Euphrates anytime because there's nothing to do with rainwater. Ufliga dide adide. But Shmuel contradicted himself. Why? De amar Shmuel, en amai mitarim bezochlim, ela prat biyomet tishri bilvad. He came along and said that the only time you can dip in the Euphrates River is when? In the months of Tishri. Why? Because in the month of Tishri, we're not concerned about any rain from Eretz Yisrael in it. But in the months of Nisan, you'll have a problem. What do you mean? You just told me, Shmuel, that it's not affected by the rainwater. So he himself is soter himself. So you have to say that Shmuel could be held, meaning when he was learning it, he understood that really wasn't affected by rainwater. But you know what? When it came to halakha l'maaseh, he was mahmir. And therefore, since there's another opinion out there that says it is affected by rainwater, so you can only dip in the Euphrates in Tishri. That's before the rainy season. But after the rainy season in Nisan, he agreed with Rav that it is forbidden. Now we understand why Abu Dishmuel did not let his daughters go into the Euphrates. He made for them mikvaot. Clear? Okay. Now, the Gemara doesn't explain the fourth thing that he did, so we'll go back to it now. The fourth thing that it said what he did was, he made for them mats, right? Mm-hmm. What did he make mats for? So that she says in Amud Rishon, Shetoblot Befrat, when they used to dip in the Euphrates River, there was a lot of tar there on the bed of the river. So he didn't want to have a hatzitza in interference on their feet, which means they're going to go into the mikveh, there's going to be all black tar on their legs. It's no good for the mikveh. So what did he do? He made for them mats that he would place on the bottom of the water, so when they would dip, they were not touching the floor, so therefore there was no problem of hatzitza. That's the way that she learns. Look at the bottom to the fourth and Amud Rishon.
In the water, he put the mats on the bank as they're walking.
Wherever the tar was. If the tar was on the bottom of the water, he placed it over there. Or on the way in, let's say, to the water, he placed it there. But he made sure that their feet are not going to come in contact with the tar that was in the water. Now, look at Tosfot. The bottom Tosfot and Amud Rishon. Umaseh biyomet tishne, perusha kuntras. Mepnei atit shelo yahatitza, v'notel tabapas tat ragleihen. V'rabinu tam piresh. No, he placed these mats standing vertically. It was for tzniut purposes. Which means he didn't want them to be nervous in the mikveh that somebody's watching them, and therefore they're not going to dip properly. So he wanted them to be comfortable to dip with time. So what did he do? He put walls up for them. So now they were private. So they would dip with the proper way, without any pressure. And remember, the tibirah will be kasher. Comes the Gemara and continues. Porefet ala ebed. We said in the Mishnah that a lady is allowed to be porefet ala ebed on Shabbat. So the Gemara says, amar tresha porefet. Which means, if you look at the Mishnah, let's go back to the Mishnah to understand this question. At the Mishnah it said, Porefet ala eben vada egoz vala matbeya, ubilvad shelo teflofech et ha'ila b'shabbat. You can't make this pity bones, you can't attach the stone to the garment on Shabbat. But it just said a second ago, Porefet, you can put it on Shabbat. So we have a stida in the same statement itself. Porefet ala eben vada egoz vala matbeya. What does that mean? On Shabbat you can actually fasten it and tie it and do it. And then the second later it says, but you can't do the chetel on Shabbat. So you'll answer me like this. You'll say, no, Rabbi, when it says porefet ala evin, it means if you prepared it before Shabbat, then it's permissible. It can't be that. Because right before that it said,
Umidiyot pirufot, which we learned earlier that the ladies are allowed to go out on Shabbat pirufot, which means it was done already from before Shabbat, so they can go out on Shabbat. So we know if you set up from Erev Shabbat, it's permissible. So it must be the second statement of the Mishnah when it said porefet ala even means even on Shabbat. Also, if that statement means even on Shabbat, then the second statement that says ubilvad shalot tefachet ala Shabbat is a direct stira. How do we reconcile the two statements that are back to back to each other in the Mishnah? So the Gemara again says, Sefa atan lematbeya. You know what we're talking about? When you can't do it on Chetela on Shabbat, that's talking about if you're going to use a coin. If you're going to use a rock, or if you're going to use a nut to make the pirifa, you can even do it on Chetela on Shabbat. You're going to ask me, what do you mean about a rock is mukseh? How could you pick up the rock? So then she says, no, it's enough to do yihud. What does yihud mean? You designate it. Before Shabbat, I come along and verbally, let's say, you know what? This rock over here, I'm going to use for pirifa. Let's go slow. It's not designated. I have a rock, a regular rock. I come before Shabbat and say, this rock now, which is normally mukseh, I am designating it for a button. Beautiful. Now Shabbat, you can come and take it. Now, obviously, the nut, you'll have to make designation. The nut is not mukseh. However, the chidush is, designation helps by a rock, but it's not going to help by a coin. Which means, if before Shabbat, let's say you took this coin, I am using this for a pirifa, doesn't help. Oh, what do you mean? The only way to get the coin to be non-mukseh is you actually had to use it once. I mean, since a coin has a functionality to it, it's a coin, it has value to it. So therefore the yihud must be a stronger yihud. It's not enough to make yihud be'dibur. You must make yihud be'ma'aseh. So therefore when the Mishnah says, but lechetailat shabbat, you cannot make pirifa, it means yeah, with a coin. Whereas a rod that you designated before Shabbat, you can lechetailat make pirifa on Shabbat. But a coin? No. Let's read Rashi. Look at Rashi. Rashi dibur ha-matchil sefa. Right on the bottom of the daf there. You see Rashi? Actually, we can read the one before that. Ha amart lesha porefet, that's where the question is. You told me originally that on Shabbat she can be porefet. For sure, when it said porefet, it means on Shabbat. If it was talking about where you did it, me'ayrim Shabbat, v'lashmina diyotzambo b'Shabbat, atana lesha mediyot porefot. We learned already that you're allowed to go out on Shabbat. Ella must be talking about when it says porefet, they can actually make the pirifa on Shabbat. So the Gemara says, Sefa diktani lo tefruf atan lematbeya. Delav bar tiltulu. Aval even shekzalekach ra'u letiltul. I mean, a rod that you designated is permissible, but a coin that you designated, no. Ela, what do you have to do with the coin? You have to actually use it. Well, you can't use it like a tail on Shabbat, because it is mukseh. So therefore, lo tefruf be Shabbat be matbeya. Aval be'even she'exal me'erev Shabbat mutar. Where's point to the Gemara? Gemara says,
what does it mean ba'ala matbeah?
Which means, yeah, which means that you have to say it's only talking about me'erev Shabbat if you did it. However, when the sefa says v'lo tefluch etelah b'Shabbat, that's dafka by a matbeah. So that matbeah is not, you have to take it out of that first statement, which is that first statement that said it's asur, that's mutar, cannot be referring to matbeah. Only if you wore it either Me'erev Shabbat with a matbaya, where you made designation, then you can continue wearing it on Shabbat with it.
You can continue wearing.
Correct. But if you did not wear it before Shabbat with a matbaya, mukseh. And even if you designated it verbally before Shabbat, still it's mukseh. So we're re-explaining the Mishnah. You're right, we're redefining the Mishnah. Well, you're right, when the Mishnah said, I go back, porefet ala eben v'ala goz v'ala matbaya, you have to take out matbeah, so to speak, which means you're right, unless you used it before Shabbat. Right. But then already the din of the rock and the matbeah is not the same.
Ubilvad
shelo tefluf lekatzahila b'matbeah. B'matbeah. And you have to say that you're on Shabbat. And you have to say that the case before that was talking about either you designated and used it,
right,
or it's talking about standard. You could do it on, if you did it me'arev Shabbat, like, then you could wear it on Shabbat itself.
So you continue wearing it.
Yes, continue wearing it. Comes again on our last point. Gemara says, Now, Baraya Baya, Baya has a question. Isha ma'u sheta'arim v'tefrof ala egoz leotzi lebna katan v'shabbat. A lady wants to take a nut out to the public domain to give it to her child to eat. But she can't carry a nut in the public domain. Motzi mirshut reshut, it's hayevet. So what does she want to do? She wants to make a trick here. She'll put it on her, her garment, make pirifa. So we want to know, do we allow the lady to do this trick? Which is when she's wearing it as a garment, but that's not a problem. But maybe we're concerned if you're going to let her trick and put the nut on her garment, she might end up coming to carry it. Yeah. So therefore, can she make what's called an halakha harama? Harama is, can she do this the deception? What is it?
It's not tricky.
Right, this trick. So the Gemara says like this. Tibre leman damar ma'arimin. Now there's an aleph over here, nagotabah. Ma'arimin bedeleka. Tibre leman damar en ma'arimin bedeleka. This question can be asked according to both opinions. We have an opinion by a fire. God forbid somebody has a fire in the house on Shabbat. How many garments is a person allowed to recover from the house? The reason why the rabbis limited the amount of garments you could recover, because they were concerned that if we let you go in and take everything, you might come and extinguish the fire. So one rabbi says, we allow you to take as many garments as you want, so long as you are wearing them. You know, you can put 10 jackets over yourself, you could put 10 coats over yourself, so long as you're just wearing it. Now that opinion holds up harama, which means really you don't care for these garments, so to speak, but so long as you're wearing them, it's okay, it'll allow you to take them out. Another opinion says, no, you can't make haram over here. You can't just take 10 garments over one another. You're only allowed to take the 18 essential garments, one of each item that's essential. So we see that there's a mahloket, can you be ma'arim or not by a fire? So the Gemara says, regarding this question is being asked according to both opinions. Which means whether you hold of harama or not, even if you hold that harama is forbidden, we're still asking, maybe this case is different. Can the lady go out in the public domain with the evan attached to her garment to give it to her child? So the Gemara explains. I'll ask a court opinion that says you can make harama by the case of the fire, meaning you can go out with a lot of garments on your shoulder, wearing them, not with shoulder, meaning actually wearing a lot of garments. I could say, the reason why he's lenient over there? Because if you don't let him take out as many garments as he can, he's going to come to extinguish the fire. I can tell you, maybe he'll be mahmid in this case. Because there's no reason to allow this trick. Because if we don't allow her to take this nut out, she's not going to take it out explicitly, be motzi mirshut reshut. So it could be he was only lenient in haram over there by the fire to take out many garments over himself. Why? Because if you don't allow her to do that, he'll put out the fire. But here, if you don't allow her to put the nut on her garment, she's going to carry it? So it could be the mekel in haram will be Mahmir over here, and we have the opposite way, or Dilma, or I could say the opposite. Afil leman damar en ma'arimin bedeleka, or I could say according to the opinion that says what en ma'arimin bedeleka, that over there he does not allow you to put many garments on yourself. Hatam derechot zabekach. You know why? Because by placing a lot of garments on your back, that's the normal way to carry garments. What do you mean it's the normal way? Which is if you were selling suits, for example, we learned the mukhreke suit, how did they go out wearing garments? They would wear many garments on themselves. So therefore, since it's the normal derech, there's a concern that if you allow the guy to take all these garments out, he might actually come to carry, because you're letting him do it in the normal way. So that's what he said, no harama. We don't want you to do it, because this is considered, even though you're wearing 10 jackets over each other, there's people that do that. That's a normal way of transporting. So therefore there's a concern. Aval hacha, en derechot sa'abekach. Here, it's obvious, nobody carries a nut attached to their to their garment. And therefore, if we allow her to carry it by on a garment, there's no suspicion that she's going to come to carry it the Adayim. Maybe he'll say it's okay. Tiku, the Gemara leaves it open at Tiku. So again, let's just review the two sides. The Gemara wants to know, can a lady trick? She needs it really not for a garment, she needs it for the kid. What is it based on? Well, we thought it's based on Harama Mutar, Harama Not Mutar. Gemara says, no, it's not based on that. Which means I can tell you, even the opinion that says Harama is Mutar by the fire case, I can say, him. You know why over there? Because we're concerned if we don't allow him to take out those clothes, he put out the fire. But over here, he could be Mahmir. What, you're going to say, if you don't let the lady take out the nuts, she's going to come and carry it? No. And I can tell you the opposite way. I can tell you the man over there that said Harama is Asur, that's because at least she's taking it out in the normal way of carrying, which is Mukhrek Kisut, they wear the garments like that. And therefore, if you allow that, he might carry it regularly. However, over here, if you allow her to take the nut out on her shirt, what do you suspect? She's going to come to carry it out with her hands? That's the normal, not the normal way to carry a nut. So therefore, the man that was Mahmir and Ha'arama over there could be Mekel over here. So therefore, the question really is on both sides. Gemara concludes to that question. Tiku, we have to wait for it. Amen. Amen.